Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling something huge, something that affects almost every interaction you have. Why are we, well, often so bad at understanding strangers?
It's a really fundamental question, isn't it? We navigate the world making these quick judgments, but sometimes, maybe often, those judgments just fall apart.
Yeah, spectacularly sometimes. You see it everywhere. From high-stakes situations like spies operating for years undetected.
Right, or even those really tragic encounters like a traffic stop that goes horribly wrong. The source material we're looking at argues there's a common thread, a kind of systematic flaw in how we operate.
And that source is Malcolm Gladwell's book, Talking to Strangers. It really unpacks those moments where things break down between people who don't know each other.
Exactly. And our goal today, really, is to lay out Gladwell's main argument for you. He basically says that our standard tools, you know, the ways we naturally try to figure people out, they're, in his words, systematically and deeply flawed.
So it's not just us making random mistakes.
No, it's more fundamental, almost like the wiring itself is off when it comes to strangers. We're going to focus on three really key ideas he presents that explain why we tend to fail so consistently.
Okay, let's get into it. But first, maybe a bit about the author, Malcolm Gladwell. Who is he, for listeners who might not know his work?
Sure. Gladwell's a Canadian journalist. He's been writing for The New Yorker for ages, since 96, I think. He's not, like, a scientist doing the primary research himself.
Right, he's more of an interpreter.
Exactly, a brilliant synthesizer. He takes complex ideas from social science, psychology, history, and weaves them into these really compelling stories. Think of books like The Tipping Point or Outliers.
What makes his approach here so interesting, I think, is how he connects things you wouldn't normally put together. Like, he'll take a spy case.
Mm-hmm. Like Anna Montes.
And then maybe the Bernie Madoff scandal or the Sandra Bland case. Mm. And he finds this underlying pattern in human behavior.
Yeah, he really zooms out. He shows how the same kind of misreading or flawed assumption can be at play, whether it's Neville Chamberlain meeting Hitler before World War II.
Wow, that's a big leap.
It is. But he argues the core psychological mechanism, how we trust, how we misinterpret cues, can be shockingly similar to, say, what happened in that Texas traffic stop decades later. It's about the universality of the mistake.
It really makes you question your own instincts, you know?
Yeah.
So let's dive into the book's core argument. What's this flawed foundation Gladwell says we're all standing on?
Okay, so the central idea is this. Our societies function because we make a kind of unconscious bargain. We operate mostly by defaulting to certain assumptions. The big one is assuming people are telling the truth.
Okay, that makes sense for dealing with friends or family.
Right. It works well, mostly in our close circles. It's efficient. But here's the problem. We apply that same default setting to strangers, and that's where it can go catastrophically wrong.
Wait, isn't defaulting to truth kind of necessary? Like, could society even function if we suspected everyone all the time?
That's exactly Gladwell's point. He argues it's not a personal failing, it's almost a requirement for society to work at all. Imagine the cost, mentally, socially, of constantly verifying everything everyone says.
It would be exhausting.
Totally. So we accept the risk of being occasionally deceived because the alternative, constant suspicion, is just too high a price to pay. But this necessary default sets us up for specific kinds of failures. He breaks it down into three main concepts.
What are they?
Okay, first, there's the default to truth itself, our basic instinct to believe people. Second, what he calls the illusion of transparency.
Transparency, like we think we can see right through people.
Pretty much, yeah. The mistaken belief that someone's inner feelings, their honesty or dishonesty, just sort of leaks out and is obvious in their behavior or on their face.
Okay, got it. And the third?
The third is coupling. This one's maybe a bit less intuitive. It's the idea that behavior isn't just about someone's fixed character. It's deeply, inextricably tied to the specific context, the circumstances they're in at that moment.
Interesting. So these three things, default to truth, illusion of transparency, and coupling, they form the framework for understanding why we mess up with strangers.
Exactly. And importantly, he stresses this isn't really a how-to guide for becoming a better judge of character. It's more of a warning.
A call for humility.
Yeah, precisely. Humility and caution when we're forming judgments about people we don't know.
Okay, let's explore these with the examples he uses, starting with default to truth.
Right. So we start by assuming honesty. That's our baseline, which, as we said, is necessary, but leaves us wide open when we do encounter someone who's genuinely deceptive.
And the big case study here is Anna Montes.
Yeah, Anna Montes, a top Cuba analyst at the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, highly respected, very smart, and spying for Cuba for 17 years.
17 years in an intelligence agency.
Because her colleagues defaulted to truth. She was one of them. Trusted, smart. The possibility that she could be a spy just didn't compute for them, even the counterintelligence experts around her. They saw what they expected to see. A dedicated colleague.
That's unsettling. It feels like in that environment, suspicion should be higher.
Logically, maybe. But psychologically, defaulting to truth is often the easier path, the path of least resistance. Think about Bernie Madoff.
Ah, the ultimate example of exploiting trust.
Totally. He ran the biggest Ponzi scheme ever. Why did so many smart people, investors, regulators trust him? Because he looked the part. He was part of the establishment, charismatic, seemed trustworthy.
And the people who did raise red flags.
Gladwell calls them the holy fools, like Harry Markopoulos. They were the ones who didn't default to truth, who looked at the numbers and said, wait, this doesn't add up. But they were ignored for years. Why? Because challenging Madoff meant challenging the comfortable default assumption everyone else was relying on.
Okay, so defaulting to truth makes us vulnerable. But even when we are suspicious, we often think we can tell if someone's lying just by looking at them. That brings us to the illusion of transparency, right?
Exactly. This is a huge one. It's the idea, fed by maybe TV shows and movies, that emotions are written all over our faces, that we can easily spot a liar by their shifty eyes or fidgeting. Gladwell calls it the friends fallacy, like characters in a sitcom whose feelings are always obvious.
But real life isn't like Friends.
Not even close. And the consequences can be devastating. He uses the Amanda Knox case to illustrate this.
Right, the American student in Italy.
Yeah. A huge part of why she was initially convicted, Gladwell argues, was because her behavior didn't match what the police and the public expected from an innocent person whose roommate had just been murdered.
What did she do?
Well, she seemed calm sometimes. She did cartwheels in the police station waiting area. She kissed her boyfriend. It seemed off, mismatched. People interpreted that lack of visible conventional grief as coldness, as evidence of guilt.
Because her outside didn't seem to match the expected inside?
Precisely. They assumed transparency, that if she were innocent and grieving, she would look a certain way. And because she didn't, they jumped to the conclusion she must be guilty.
But surely, I mean, trained professionals, police, judges, they should be better at reading people.
That's the shocking thing. Gladwell points to research showing that even experienced professionals are, frankly, terrible lie detectors when they rely on these kinds of demeanor cues, often no better than chance.
So the cues we think signal lying nervousness, avoiding eye contact.
They're often just signs of stress or anxiety, which anyone, innocent or guilty, might feel under pressure. People are generally opaque. What you see on the outside isn't a clear window to the inside. It's often more like a performance, consciously or unconsciously managed.
Okay, that's humbling.
Yeah.
Which leads us to the third concept, coupling. This sounds like it shifts the focus away from the person entirely.
In a way, yes. Coupling is the idea that you can't understand someone's behavior just by looking at their personality or character traits. You have to look at the specific situation, the context, the environment they're in. The behavior is coupled to that context.
And the example he uses for this is Sylvia Plath, the poet. That seems unexpected.
It is, but it's powerful. He talks about her tragic suicide. Of course, her depression was a major factor. But Gladwell argues her death was also coupled to the specific context of London in 1963.
Oh, so?
At that time, homes used toxic coal gas for ovens. It provided a relatively accessible and lethal means. When Britain later switched to non-toxic natural gas, the overall suicide rate actually dropped significantly, even though the underlying rates of depression presumably didn't change overnight.
So the means, the context, was a critical part of the equation.
Exactly. The act was Plath's depression, coupled with the specific opportunity presented by the toxic gas. It forces you to reframe things. Is someone inherently lazy, or is their lack of productivity coupled to a toxic work environment? It shifts the focus from who are they to what situation are they in.
That's a really different way of thinking about behavior. And Gladwell ties all three of these, default to truth, transparency illusion, coupling back together in the Sandra Bland case.
Yes, that case serves as a sort of tragic culmination of all these failures. Tripper and Sinia's interaction with Sandra Bland was, according to Gladwell's analysis, a perfect storm of these errors.
How'd they play out?
Well, first, Ansinia arguably didn't default to truth. He seemed to immediately default to suspicion when she didn't comply instantly with a minor request.
Okay.
Then he relied heavily on the illusion of transparency. He interpreted her agitation, her frustration, which might have been perfectly understandable given the context, as signs of deception or threat. He misread her demeanor.
And coupling.
That's crucial. He failed to consider the context her behavior was coupled to. Her perspective as a Black woman being pulled over for a minor infraction in America, the power dynamic of the traffic stop, her likely feelings of annoyance or injustice.
He just saw defiance.
He seemed to see inherent aggression or noncompliance rather than behavior strongly shaped by or coupled to that specific stressful situation. So, all three flawed assumptions intersected with tragic consequences. The system, built on these weak foundations, failed.
This is a really sobering analysis. Okay, so pulling this together for listeners, what are the big overarching messages we should take away from this?
I think there are maybe four key things. First, we have to accept the trade-off with the default to truth. Believing people isn't a flaw, it's necessary. We just need to recognize the vulnerability that comes with it.
Right. It's the cost of doing business in society.
Exactly. Second, be aware of the mismatch problem. People's outsides don't always match their insides. Someone might seem trustworthy but be dangerous, like Jerry Sandusky, or seem off but be innocent, like Amanda Knox. Our expectations of matching demeanor are often wrong.
We need to be wary of those assumptions.
Third, really internalize that behavior is situational. Always ask, what's the context here? Before judging someone's actions based on perceived character. Think coupling. Maybe your colleague isn't rude, maybe they just had a horrible commute.
Give the situation more weight.
Definitely. And finally, the big one, humility. The main takeaway isn't get better at reading strangers. It's accept that you probably can't reliably read strangers. So proceed with caution and intellectual humility.
It's really about acknowledging our limitations.
Absolutely. A call for modesty in our judgments.
Gladwell has such a way with words, doesn't he? There are some lines in the book that really stick with you.
Oh, definitely. Like capturing why we trust. We default to truth because we have no choice. Truth befall is a crucial part of the foundation of human society. It frames it not as a choice, but a necessity.
Yeah. And then the direct hit on our confidence in reading people. The conviction that we can know others from the outside is an illusion. Just flat out, it's an illusion.
Mm-hmm. And that powerful statement about context. To understand a crime, you cannot simply look at the criminal. You have to understand the street corner on which it happened. Behavior is coupled to context. It forces you to look beyond the individual.
And maybe the most practical advice, the final thought. The right way to talk to strangers is with caution and humility. It is to accept that the person in front of you is a puzzle that you will likely never solve.
It really summarizes the whole book, that call for humility.
So how do we actually use this? I mean, beyond just thinking about it, what are some real life applications?
Well, there are quite a few practical shifts this suggests. Professionally, think about hiring. So many people rely on that interview gut feeling.
Right. Do I like this person? Do they seem trustworthy?
Exactly. But Gladwell's work suggests your ability to judge someone's competence or honesty in a 30-minute chat is probably really poor. You'd be better off relying more on objective stuff, verified track records, structured tests, actual data, and less on how charming they seem.
De-emphasize the subjective impression.
Precisely. And interpersonally. Be more charitable. If a stranger seems abrupt or awkward, or even if you're arguing with someone you know well, remember the transparency illusion. You probably don't know exactly what they're feeling or why they're acting that way.
Don't assume you can read their mind.
Right. Consider the context. Maybe they just got bad news. Maybe they're incredibly stressed about something unrelated. Give them the benefit of the doubt that their behavior is coupled to a situation you're unaware of. Ask. Don't assume.
That takes effort, though.
It does. And civically, be a smarter consumer of news. When you hear media reports describing a defendant as looking remorseless or cold in court.
Based purely on their demeanor.
Yeah. Recognize that as a potential, even likely, transparency error. Question judgments, especially within systems like justice, that rely heavily on these subjective reads of people.
So the big shift isn't about becoming a better human lie detector.
No, Gladwell pretty much says that's a lost cause for most of us. The real goal should be designing better systems. Systems in policing, in courtrooms, in hiring, that are less reliant on fallible human judgment about strangers. Systems that acknowledge our limitations and build in safeguards.
Build processes that account for the fact that we're flawed judges.
Exactly. Make the systems more robust against our inherent biases and errors.
You know, what really struck me, and honestly what I found kind of difficult to accept, was that idea that we should basically stop trying so hard to read people, to trust our gut. It feels so counterintuitive.
It really does cut against the grain, doesn't it? We're raised to believe in intuition, but maybe the real wisdom, as Gladwell suggests, lies in recognizing the profound limits of what we can truly know about another person, especially a stranger.
It's a shift from seeking mastery to embracing humility.
I think that's the perfect way to put it. True wisdom here might just be acknowledging our inability to fully solve the puzzle of the stranger and designing our interactions and our systems accordingly.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecotra Foundation.